Whenever I have a chance to talk about creating phone-free spaces in schools, I'm often asked the question, but don't you care about technology? Don't we want our kids to have technology in school? And my answer is yes. And in fact, let my guest tell you exactly how we feel about this.
I also want to be clear that as an educator, I'm pro-technology. I'm extremely, extremely positive about the power of technology, and I really believe in how technology in educational settings can actually, it can make your world bigger. Look at what we're doing here, the three of us, and in the Bay Area, right? You know, I'm surrounded by these companies, Google, Apple, Yahoo, Twitter, Facebook. This is San Mateo is literally where these companies have like all their employees living, right? And at the same time, technology can actually make your world smaller. Technology, look at the three of us. We're in these different parts of the country, and you're gonna send this out to a bunch of people who do this kind of work that I do, who I'll never meet. I'll never speak to these people. But this, the way we use technology is going to help us connect with each other. It's making our world bigger. But look at all the work that went into producing this podcast, the phone calls, the emails, the PDFs, the questions, the prep work. It's not just, we didn't just jump on the computer and start talking. We engaged, we collaborated. And that's what I want to see teenagers do when they use technology.
My guests today are Graham Dugoni and Diego Ochoa. I can't wait to play the rest of the conversation for you. I'm Peter Stiepelman, and this is An Imperfect Leader. Today on An Imperfect Leader, Diego Ochoa and Graham Dugoni are my guests. Superintendent Ochoa has been the leader of the San Mateo Foster City Schools, located in the South Bay between San Francisco and San Jose, a little closer to San Francisco, but he's been there since 2021. He has more than 25 years of educational experience as a teacher, an assistant principal, a director, an executive director, and as a superintendent. And he has a really strong background in curriculum, instruction, special education, equity, student wellness, parent engagement, and school facilities. Man, you have a lot of tools. And Graham is the founder of Yonder, the established industry leader in helping educators, performing artists, families, organizations, and businesses all around the world create phone-free spaces. And for full disclosure, Yonder is a sponsor of the podcast. Gentlemen, welcome to An Imperfect Leader.
Oh, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
I am so excited to spend some time with both of you today because we're going to talk about something that you both care about deeply, student success. So let me start with you, Diego, if that's all right. I'm going to read two statements, and then I'm going to ask you how they resonate with you. So the prompt is this. Teachers have reported that they have had to add additional material to their lesson plans because they're no longer losing time managing cell phones. And my second statement is that children now have to be reminded to keep their voices down in the cafeteria. And I'll tell you, I went and visited one of your schools, and the principal had to do that sort of that old fashioned, you know, you're at a level 5 and I need you at a level 2, you know, which is hilarious because it's been some time since we've had to sort of go back to the fact that kids are talking to each other again. So in those statements that you just heard, do they sound familiar to you?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I'm going to just take a guess here. I don't know how long you've been doing this work and been involved in education, but I'm going to guess you've been at this a while. And so all of us in this field, we've seen teenagers just change over the last 25 years so much. And I think we got to a really unhealthy place about 5-10 years ago, where more and more teenagers started to get personal electronics that they brought to school. And what you actually saw kids do was pull away from each other. You know, 25 years ago, you see kids at lunch and you see 4, 5, 6 teenagers all looking at each other and they're having a conversation. There's some engagement there. And then, you know, the last 7 to 8, 10 years, you saw kids looking down like this and not talking to each other. And that's certainly what we saw in San Mateo Foster City. We went with a program where we brought in Yonder and basically we put kids' phones away when they came on campus. And what our teacher said was, actually it first came through students. Students did a survey, and over 100 students at this one middle school in their survey said, The biggest change I see in class is more students are paying attention to what the teacher is saying in class. So teachers go, oh, I'm not repeating myself over and over again. I'm not having to restate things. And I can expect to do more with my teenagers. So the teachers have figured out that the work production is higher from our teenagers. So they just plan more activities that get the kids engaged during those lessons. And then definitely at lunch, we see these teenagers talking to each other.
You know, that's interesting. I think to myself the fact that in 2007 is when the iPhone was introduced, 2008 is the Android, and school districts initially said no phones. And then they started to move towards, well, maybe bring your own device because maybe we could use it to leverage, learning and use it for education. Pandemic hits. And what I think gets exacerbated or what sort of amplifies is how isolated kids were and how they became so connected to their device and social media and the life that they wish they had and they don't have and all those types of things. And they bring it to school after the pandemic. And so we've got this sort of post-pandemic learning, and they are so overwhelmed by technology now. And meanwhile, schools during the pandemic went one-to-one. So now there was not really much of an argument in terms of will they have devices to be able to access learning, that they do have those types of technology and devices at school, and the phone really is serving as a major distraction. And so the fact that, as you mentioned, that teachers now can see that they can teach more because it isn't just the act of telling a kid to put away their phone. It's that transition in the kid's brain to say, now the phone's away and I'm already thinking, still thinking about it. And how do I get back into my learning? Whereas the teacher can
That's
also
right.
maintain a flow of teaching, right? As opposed to managing phones all the time. And then the lunchtime piece is really kind of interesting because you have all these adults highly trained, and what they were being used for was managing phones as opposed to really building relationships with kids. That's their skill set. That's their superpower. You know, I read something about how you made this decision to move towards phone free. And I wonder, would you describe maybe what prompted this
Yeah.
district-wide decision to create phone free spaces in your schools?
Yeah, we came back from the pandemic, as you know, just a couple of months before the end of the prior school year. You remember they were just changing all the health regulations so quickly, and school districts started to do hybrid and some in person. And so when I got hired in San Mateo Foster City, it was really the first year that we were legitimately back 100%. And what we found was our teenagers came back with so many intense mental health and social emotional needs, and we weren't equipped. We didn't have enough social workers. We didn't have enough counselors. We were sort of surprised at how intense the need was. And we had certainly increased our staffing, but it wasn't sufficient. What we started to see over the course of that fall and leading into the spring before we adopted the Yonder program was we saw kids taking small disagreements with each other and using their phones to broadcast it. Using their phone as a tool to hurt somebody else. I'm going to send an awful message to somebody else, and I'm going to make sure 100 other kids see that message instantaneously. And I'm overwhelmed by being in my class with my teacher. I'm going to start looking at my phone the entire class time. And we were lucky to have a partner in San Mateo, our local high school district, that one of their six high schools is using the Yonder program. I sent a group of administrators and staff to go watch these teenagers, these high schoolers, and they came back and said, Diego, these kids are talking to each other. These kids, it's different. It is really unique. We said, let's hold some parent meetings and let's adopt. For us, it was about a 45-day process.
So, Graham, after hearing these comments, what's your reaction?
Well, it's obviously it's great for me to hear. It's exciting. It's really exactly what I started the company to try to help school leaders accomplish. That was the genesis of when I started the company in 2014. It was a very, very different landscape than it is now. And when I was going into schools around the Bay at the time in 2014, generally the idea that I was hearing from most people was that school leaders were trying to get more technology into the classroom. It was still kind of early on, and a lot of things have happened since then. And the pandemic is one of them. And I think people's awareness of the issues of smartphones, but also just the internet in general and young people and how they're developing, how they're learning, their social development, how that affects school leaders and their ability to create an environment that's conducive to learning and development for students, all of that has changed radically. But really, since early days, our mission as a company has been to support district leaders and school leaders. And we view ourselves as facilitators at the end of the day. So it's incredibly exciting to me to hear that we're helpful for students and for school leaders. And certainly one of my fundamental kind of insights early on is that there was going to be a lot of unanticipated consequences of smartphones.
One of the things we think about as superintendents is the sort of the portrait of a graduate. And one of the things that we think about is preparing kids for life after high school. And that sometimes includes a 2-year or 4-year school. It can include the military, it can include internships. It's really preparing kids to enter that workforce. And a big part of being in the workforce is knowing how to collaborate and coordinate and talk to people and manage tension and disagreements and all those kinds of things. And that, it sounds like, Diego, from your perspective, that was sort of missing when kids came back from the pandemic and were so glued to their phones, so distracted. And it sounds like Yonder provides this opportunity to not just be a technical change, right, a technical tool or a technical solution, but rather really is a cultural solution, because it shifts the culture in your school from one that is high on distraction and really you're trying to maximize learning for kids. Have you seen that as a piece, or is that something that really sort of spoke to you, is this culture shift, it sounds like?
You know, in our case, it happened in such a way that we were making instructional modifications system-wide, where in education, we can trace back over decades what happens when your state Department of Ed, and it can be California, it can be in the Midwest, it can be on the East Coast, when you are told what kids need to learn and how they're going to test whether or not kids are learning it. You put school districts in a place to say, let's figure out how to make sure these kids can do really well in these tests. And the result systematically and historically has been to try to get down to the most direct way of getting kids to perform on standardized tests. And that, as an educator, that's very low level. That's very uninspiring. The kids might do well on a test and then not be able to apply it beyond that test. What our career fields are asking for is they're asking for thinkers, and they're asking for problem solvers, and they're asking for communicators. What we chose to do was, while we went through this process to adopt Yonder, we also shifted into a new way of teaching in our middle schools, where you'll go into our math classrooms and you'll see the students face one another in these small groups. And the teacher looks like an after-school program coordinator, like just facilitating, going around the room. The way I learned math, and probably the two of you, you were told to follow along while the teacher did a few problems, and then you were told, now do 25 of these on your own.
Right. Raise
your
hand. Do the odd numbers.
Raise your hand if you need help. And the answers are in the back of the book. Now you go into our schools and you see kids working together. And we adopted a new career readiness course for all of our middle schools that puts kids into small groups and removes the teacher as the instructor.
Right,
and
makes kids, them the activator of learning, activator of knowledge.
That's right. Yeah. So you do that, you look at our science instruction, adopted a whole new science program based on inquiry. What does that have to do with Yonder and with the shift that we made? It's about communication and it's about engagement. And when kids have their phones out in class, that can't happen.
In my book and in the leadership model that I use to advise others, there's a dimension called collective aspiration. And that's really the heart of an organization's work. And inside that dimension, there's a term, compelling purpose. And one's compelling purpose is revealed when teachers and leaders and parents and kids all come together and explore, like, when they felt the most energized. So Diego, you were just talking about really like project-based learning and place-based learning as a way to sort of complement the high-stakes standardized tests that we all are you know, subjected to. And it really speaks to this question of, what do we want to create together? And the more I think about a school's compelling purpose or their strategic plans, and again, you know, strategic planning is something you're noted for, Diego, is that those things cannot be achieved if the underlying issue is, you know, that nearly 50% of teens say that they're online almost constantly, which is roughly double the share of that, the same measure that was done 10 years ago. And that was done by the Pew Research Center. I'll put that in the show notes. We know that the UN has put out a report really cautioning schools and nations across the globe about cell phone use and social media. We know that the US Surgeon General has also created a guidance and a recommendation to schools. And so This time, I'd like to start with you, Graham, if you don't mind. It's, you know, while you may not have served as a school or district leader, I'm certain that you found that there are so many similarities when it comes to leadership, whether you're an entrepreneur like you or an educational leader like Diego, which, by the way, I think, you know, requires an entrepreneurial attitude to be a superintendent. Would you talk about what you've noticed over the last 5 years working side by side with school and district leaders?
Yeah, I mean, there's so much in that question for me. I mean, I've been in a very
I'm noted for asking long-winded questions, so sorry about that.
No, it's good. I mean, I've been very fortunate for a long period of time to interact with and to be able to see how so many different school leaders run their schools are really around the world. So for me, I've had a really interesting perspective on the question. I think as an organization and as a leader in my own right of an organization and interacting in the educational world, I've noticed there is a common thread that runs through every successful school and every school district leader and really all organizations I've interacted with. And the way we've built our program has been informed by educators and them saying, have you thought of this? Have you built this? And really trial and error. So for us as an organization, and what I've noticed mirrored on the other side is there's this willingness to learn, I think, and a willingness to try new things that tends to be a defining characteristic of people in the educational world that I've really respected and learned a lot from. And it's informed, it's really a foundational aspect of Yonder has been the idea that we are here to help, we're here to serve. Yonder is a facilitator for people who are in leadership positions who are affecting the outcomes for students around the world. That's been kind of our motivating force, I guess. And then the attitude we try to approach it, that with is learning from every single experience we have. Because when we set out to help create foam-free spaces in 2014, there was no roadmap on how to do it. But the question is really different everywhere. It's different on the East Coast. It's different in a suburban versus an urban school. It's a different question in Australia, in the United Kingdom, as it is in Los Angeles. So it's really been all about learning from people in these different spaces and saying, what is working for you? What are you seeing? How does this help you? And again, this question of what it means to be a young person walking through the world with a computer in your pocket is a very new idea. How are we going to wrestle with that? And our belief that helping to create foam-free spaces is what Yonder can do to help support these students and leaders to then fill in that space and allow things to flourish inside classrooms and inside of schools. That's not for Yonder to do. Our role is to help administrators and school leaders create the structure that allows things to flourish inside of that. So it's really nice to hear and really inspiring to hear from Diego the different changes in the curriculum and what you're doing to affect students' learning, because that's always something in the back of my mind is, how are they learning? If they're looking at their phone all the time or they're retrieving information off the internet, is that critical thinking? Is that facilitating sustained attention? These are crucial life skills that are going to be necessary to just to navigate and to learn.
How does the term an imperfect leader resonate with you?
As a, you know, just as a longtime educator, you join this profession and you realize immediately how you become part of a team. And you start to see a structure in our business where a leader can have a tremendous impact on the organization. And I was very blessed and very fortunate to have a principal in my first experience, and he didn't take himself too seriously. And he would tell us in our meetings, he would say, hey, this thing that we're facing is really, really challenging, and I don't have all the answers. And some of you have some of those answers, and we're going to work on it together. And he told us through his actions and through his approach that he needed us and that we mattered and that we were valued. And that's, I've never tried to let go of that sense that, you know, I'm the superintendent in San Mateo Foster City, but I have, you know, 1500 colleagues that work here with me that are all doing their part. We're all part of this process. As the superintendent of the district, you accept certain roles that you're required to do that are important, that, you know, have a direct impact on the culture that you send. But you realize we're all human, you know, we're all wonderful, but we're all flawed. And that's part of being an imperfect leader, is knowing what your strengths are and knowing when you need to ask one of your colleagues to step in and contribute and help you and support you. And to me, that's what I take away from the phrase of an imperfect leader.
Graham, same question for you.
Yeah, it's a good one. I guess for me, I think of an imperfect leader, which I certainly am. I think one thing that I've committed to, and I it's kind of a mantra for me, is that in everyone in our organization, is that I'm committed to trying new things, not being afraid of making mistakes, and that we're always going to learn by doing. But committing to take, you know, making decisions, trying things, is a solid rubric for learning how to grow, because then every mistake and everything, it's my mistake, and I can learn from it, and our group can learn from it. And it's empowering, I think, for people to know that it's okay to take chances, you're going to grow from them. It's easy to say. In practice, when you're growing an organization and things in the day-to-day, it can be more difficult to practice, but to me, that's what it is. And it also gives you or gives me some grace when things don't go exactly as I'd like to, and I feel like I should have known better. At least I can say I made a decision, even if it was the wrong decision, and take that with me.
And we'll be right back. Hey, district leaders, I know you already know this. In schools worldwide, cell phones are posing real challenges on student engagement and mental well-being, and I want you to meet Yonder, a proud sponsor of An Imperfect Leader. And let me share this story from a visit I made to some schools in Silicon Valley. I asked some kids what they liked about Yonder, and after some funny looks, they shared that actually, with Yonder, teachers don't have to battle with them over phones anymore. In fact, one kid said to me he didn't have to worry anymore about his parents texting him in class, and the kid next to him like sort of shoved him and goes, "Texting? My mom used to FaceTime me in class." I want to introduce you to a support system that increases teaching and learning. I want you to discover why 1 million students choose Yonder daily. Minimize distractions, maximize learning potential. To learn more, go to overyonder.com. Y-O-N-D-R. We're back for segment 2 of An Imperfect Leader, called Imperfect Leadership in After Action. And my guests are Diego Ochoa and Graham Dugoni. Superintendent Ochoa is the leader of the San Mateo Foster City Schools. Graham is the founder of Yonder, the established industry leader in helping schools go phone free. In this segment, we ask our guests to deconstruct a decision that they have made, and then we discuss it. So, okay, Diego, what happened?
When we went down this path of adopting Yonder as a district, and I do want to be very clear about the fact that we made the decision for every school that serves our teenagers. We didn't just hand select a school or choose a pilot school. We went as a district-wide strategy. We built it into our strategic plan. It became codified. Our school board approved it at a public meeting, and we went through a whole process of meeting with parents. What I look back on and wish I had done differently is I wish that I would have reached out to my students, to my young people, and said, "Hey, we want to bring student voices into this. We want to know what you think about this, and we want to know what we should be prepared to plan for." And if we had done that, we could have avoided some of the trip ups that we had in how we implemented Yonder the first couple of weeks. I had some pretty stressed out site administrators because we just needed things like where we were going to have the kids demagnetize the pouch so that they could take their phone out at the end of the day. Seems like a little thing, but you know, when you have 300 teenagers standing in a line saying, My bus is going to leave. Yeah. I mean, that's not cool, Peter. You know what I mean? That's, I don't want to be that guy.
No, standing. Especially middle school kids, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Because that's the same kid that you're going to be saying, "Hey, get to class on time tomorrow." It's like, you know, you're the one that made me miss my bus and I had to wait. I got home an hour late and I got in trouble with my parents and that sort of thing. So those, you know, hindsight's 20/20, but when you implement a new program, you want to go into it and say, "Let me bring in my stakeholders, let me get them connected." And we should have talked to our kids and we didn't. And that's what I would have done differently.
So, okay. So typically we start off with what happened, and you are so good at being immediately reflective. So what I understand to be true is what happened is here you are working on your strategic plan. And one of the pieces is about instructional time, instructional practice. And you know, you're not going to add more days or more hours to the calendar. And one of the things you're likely hearing from your teachers is the issue of phones. I know for a fact that a NEA union rep or president told me that 61% of her members, and that included elementary. And so she said, you know, if I moved elementary out, it would be a higher percentage. So, but 61 is almost 2/3 of your members. So they said that phones, like arguing and dealing with phones, was the biggest issue for them. It was even bigger than salary, she said, which really surprised me because we know that's a super important part of collective bargaining is, you know, how to make the appropriate salary adjustments and increases. So here you are, you've likely heard from your teachers, you've heard from your administrators, and one of the things that you wish you had done as we think about what got overlooked is bringing in student voice, because while they were not going to vote about whether to do it or not, they could have given you pretty good insights into how it could go well, and including them on in the why. Graham, I'm curious, because I imagine that you have been thinking about how to include student voice into this decision making, and I wonder if you might talk to that a little bit.
Yeah, it's very similar, I would say, to what Diego talked about. Really resonates with me. We've had many experiences like that. It's what we've learned over time, and something that I would do differently if I could go back to 2016 with some of the early district partners that we worked with, is kind of in the rollout period of making sure everyone is aware of what you're doing and why. We've talked about, you know, creating a phone-free space, the cultural kind of aspect of what that does for a school and the change. It's very important, we've learned, that every group, every stakeholder understands not only what's going to happen in the specifics of the rollout and what the program will look like, but most importantly, the why. I think with students, it's very important. And what we've learned over time is we have no illusions that every student day one is going to say, terrific, I'm not going to use my phone all day. Let me sign up with that. But what we have learned is it's very important still to take the time to explain what's going to happen, why, and how this is a good thing, and how students are going to benefit from this experience. And what we have found that when you take the time to do that, you educate the community, that includes parents, this is leadership at the school, this is teachers and students, and explain what's going on and why and how this is going to benefit them. What we found is that usually about a couple weeks or a month into school being phone free, a lot of students in the school begrudgingly sometimes will admit that they actually feel a sense of relief, that they actually appreciate not having to worry about keeping up with social media and all the different things. But I think if you forget to layer on the messaging and give them kind of the breadcrumbs to understand and have that in their brain about what they might expect to see, then you miss the opportunity for the educational aspect, and they might just view it as a rule. And you know, it's okay for there to be structure and rules, but I think it's much more powerful when you also give them some of that information that they can attach to, because young people are with it. They understand that something is out of whack. And I think it's part of our role in helping create a phone-free space to give them those tidbits that they can start to tie the associations between maybe feelings of anxiety or distractions or the way they're learning, and tie it back to the role of technology in their lives. And, you know, that's educating them as they not only are in middle school or high school, but as they go forward on what the correct role of technology can be in their own lives, and they can make that decision for themselves as they get older.
Diego, I see you nodding your head yes.
Well, first of all, kids have good ideas. The three of us, we are so far away from being teenagers that we are looking at the solution to these problems, to these concerns. And we have our whole schema, our whole experience, our whole adulthood, our responsibility. Talk to a teenager about how to keep kids from using their phone in class, and they came up with some of the best ideas.
That's interesting. It made me think about the fact that having visited your schools and to see personnel, teachers, counselors, administrators at the entrances greeting kids really speaks to potentially the relationship building that they're doing with kids. So not just put away your phone, but rather now being able to see the kid who's usually really happy in the morning, you know, and appears to be glum, right? Or the kid who seems disheveled and maybe wearing the same clothes from the day before, knowing that child maybe needs a little extra attention. And so I'm curious, what did you learn about relationships, or what new relationships were formed based on the decisions you were making around phone-free spaces?
Well, what we saw too was that these schools, you know, my middle schools, they have about 1,000 kids. So these are big places. And it can actually be very painful for a teenager to go somewhere so public and to be, you know, the expression, like, I'm surrounded by people, but I'm alone. I'm on my phone the entire day. even though I'm constantly being put in different scenarios with a bunch of other people. But the other kids in my class don't talk to me. And my teachers don't stand at the door and say hello to me. And at the entrance of the school, no one's there. So this shift that we made regarding engagement and collaboration and the implementation of Yonder has created a culture where I would be shocked if there were any kids who said, nobody spoke to me today at school. And that would absolutely have been the case 2 years ago for a lot of kids. And the sad part, the same kids every day. You know, they're sort of, they're auditing their school experience. They're silent. They're alone. They're surrounded by people and they're lonely. And we just don't see that with the changes that we've made to get these kids connected and talking to each other and to encourage a culture where our adults are doing the same thing.
So Graham, had that been in your mind as you were thinking about talking to schools about creating phone-free spaces or?
Of creating some structure, and that idea of the threshold that Diego mentioned, I love the idea. And I love that it can become a touch point, and that gateway kind of image is exactly what we see. And I think that's really important because that's true in all aspects of daily life. You step into a space and every different space has its own parameters or its different kind of way of operating. And so for schools, I think creating that moment of allowing students to click over and say, well, I sent out my last messages and things, and now I step into this space and here's what this space is about. And in this space, everyone is on a level playing field. Everyone's engaging with each other and that's just gone. I think that's fantastic.
In the end, what was something that was good that came out of this experience?
Well, I think there's a lot. I think one of the things we hear, you know, we ran a survey with our schools about a year ago, and I think something that stood out to me was the idea that what we heard back from our school partners was that 85% of teachers saw a rise in student engagement. That to me was a big deal. Just knowing the students' eyes were up, they're paying attention to what's going on and what their teacher's telling them, and that they're learning. We've also heard from a lot of school leaders that teacher retention, that the idea of removing phones and distractions from the classroom is become a big tool for retaining teachers, because I think Diego mentioned earlier, and I think it's a big part of what we believe, the idea of phones in the school is such a huge issue, and they really, most educators fall into one of two camps. One sees the problem is so huge and so ubiquitous that you kind of couldn't possibly tackle it. It's like the train has left the station. And the other who says it is a huge problem, how on earth are we going to challenge it? But they've kind of got the moxie and they've got their staff is on board to go try to tackle it. And I think from Yonder's perspective, we're there to say it is possible. Here's what we've learned from other school leaders. Here's a way to do it. But then it goes back to the school leader to go do that. And we know it's a lift, but it's very inspiring to see school leaders take that on and all the benefits that come with it.
Diego, same question for you.
Yeah, one thing I do want to talk about is the reality of being a superintendent and making a shift to a program like Yonder.
Please.
Every superintendent in this profession is saying, I need new reading materials. I need to train staff on social emotional learning. I need to build new classroom facilities. Very few of us are saying, I need to find a program that can help me engage and increase student connections and conversations, and to do that by putting kids' phones away on a permanent basis. That, you know, even I pride myself on being the type of leader that I'm always looking for another way, another path, another idea, another strategy. And this one had been there and I wasn't accessing it. And there is a component where you say, what is the cost of this? What is this going to cost us? And how do I go to my school board and say, I need to spend X number of dollars for this thing that, you know, for a lot of adults, it's our only reference point is, oh, yeah, I had to do that when I went and watched, Kevin Hart over at the arena, or, you know, when I went to this concert, I had to put my phone away. And we say, no, there's a much bigger decision behind this. There's a much bigger hope tied into this thing. And that's where that reality of taking on a challenge of saying, we're going to expect our teenagers to talk more with one another. We're going to expect our teenagers to be way more engaged with their teachers and with their materials. And I think a lot of us had to also question how much we believed it was even possible because of how addicted adults are to their phone. We haven't talked about this in this podcast, but a lot of adults are on their phone all the time. So I think that, you know, the psychology of sort of like, if I can't do it, how do I expect all these young people to do it? Well, the benefit from making this shift and seeing kids connect with each other more and seeing our teachers report just having a total shift in that in-class environment, for us, it's been worth every penny we invested in the program.
My guests today were Diego Ochoa and Graham Dugoni. Diego is the leader of the San Mateo Foster City Schools, and Graham is the founder of Yonder, the industry leader in helping schools go phone free. And both of you really talked about crossing this threshold into schools where schools are almost a sanctuary, where children are valued and honored. And, you know, the two of you talked about learning from others and being unafraid to make mistakes. I mean, seriously, you're talking about being lead learners. So I want to just thank you both so much for reminding us about the obligation we have to children to help them be successful, and phone-free schools are one way to do that. So thank you to both of you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Music for An Imperfect Leader was written and arranged by Ian Varley. Sam Falbo created our artwork, a wood print-inspired Daruma doll butterfly. Remember, imperfect leadership is not a scarlet letter. It's a badge of honor. It recognizes that serving as a lead learner is about being a vulnerable leader, empathetic leader, a compassionate leader, and I'm proud to be an imperfect leader. I'm Peter Stiepelman. Please join me next time for another episode of An Imperfect Leader, Leadership in After Action.